on here. Okay. Well, when we met this morning, we are in Genesis 29 through about 31, but we're going to focus a lot on 29 just because there's so much there. 2 weeks ago, Christina did such a fabulous job of kind of laying out all the dysfunctions in the family of Isaac and Rebecca and their twin sons, Jacob and Esau. Well, the dysfunction continues. The dysfunction continues in these chapters, and the dysfunction continues with their extended family. Maybe that sounds familiar to you. Rebecca set up the deception of Jacob pretending to be Esau, and I will, the rest of my life, because of Christina, think of Esau as the red hairy guy. She was so funny describing Esau. You could just see him. So he's the red hairy guy. So they did this to get Isaac, the father's blessing. So today in this, Rebecca is still scheming. She wants to protect Jacob, so she tells him to take off to go live with her brother Laban. Jacob takes off to find Uncle Laban. Jacob is a pawn. He's hated by his brother Esau, and he's manipulated by his mother. He is going to become a man, though, as a result of the next 20 years. But he is not a man yet. He is still a weakling. When Rebecca told Jacob to flee to her brother Laban in Padan Aram for a few days, she thought she would be paying a small price for her sin. Well, as we all know, the cost of sin is always greater than we think it's going to be. So actually, the thing that Rebecca feared most came about. She feared of losing both of her sons. And this is precisely what happened. Jacob left, never to be seen by his mother, and Esau went off to live in the hill country, because we read later that she had died before he came back. So Jacob goes to find Uncle Laban, and he falls in love at first sight when he meets Rachel, Laban's daughter. So basically, it's his first cousin, but that's how it was back then. He met her when she was shepherding her father's sheep. So things are looking up for Jacob. Looks like a little scheming has worked for him. He deceived his father Isaac. He got the blessing. He escaped the red hairy guy, his brother Esau. He escaped to Laban, his uncle, and here he receives a warm welcome. Okay, so things are looking pretty good. It's like, okay, I got away with this. This is going to be great. New life, new family, new wife, and no ugly brother. So does he get away with all this? No. God steps in and he starts his little education of Jacob about consequences of one's behavior. So in verse 15, really, she's so right. I like what Christina said. This is like Jerry Springer. You know, you can't write worse stuff about families. In verse 15, Laban, the uncle, says to Jacob, "Tell me what your wages should be." Looks like he's offering to pay Jacob in addition to just his nice hospitality. But actually, he is giving notice that he is not going to entertain his little nephew indefinitely, but that Jacob is going to have to work for his keep. And from this time on, Laban is going to regard him chiefly as a servant. He has to work for Laban and in turn will receive wages. Well, poor Jacob. Jacob's never worked for anybody. He's the son of a patriarch. He's not served anybody else. Others have always served him. Besides, there's the oracle that was associated with his birth that declared the older will serve the younger, which is interesting. You'd think it would be the other way around, but this would mean that Esau would serve Jacob. But here, Jacob is serving Uncle Laban. So when asked to name his wage, Jacob replies that he will work. This boy was committed. Work for 7 years in return for Laban's daughter, Rachel. So Laban agrees. I mean, it feels like a good deal to Laban. He gets 7 years of labor to give his wife. So Laban later, 7 years later, seemed to kind of forget the deal. And Jacob reminds him, "Give me my wife. My time is completed." I can imagine he was counting the days till that 7 years were up. So Laban throws a big wedding, and they go to have their wedding night. And Laban substitutes the older daughter, Leah, for Rachel. And Jacob unwittingly sleeps with the sister of who he thought his bride was. So the text says, it's one of those understatements, when morning came, there was Leah. So I'm thinking, does this family have a hard time with their eyesight? Jacob didn't know, I mean, Isaac didn't know it was Jacob with the goat hair. Christine and I talked about how well you described the red hairy guy. Isaac doesn't recognize his sons. And now Jacob doesn't recognize his wife. And also there's a little bit of deception. Abraham has lied twice that we've talked about, that his wife is really his sister, and now we have a sister pretending to be a wife. So deception seems to flow through this family line. Well, Jacob's a little ticked. Jacob voices his outrage to Laban. He says, "What is it you have done to me?" And Laban's answer is, "Oh, we don't give the younger daughter before the older one." And I thought, you know, did we not tell you that before the 7 years and your wedding? Oh, we don't give the younger daughter before the older one. And I thought, oh my gosh, how frustrating was this? So here Jacob is being reminded. I just love we see God's hand, you know, his work threaded through all these circumstances. Jacob is being reminded that the rights of the firstborn must be respected. He was fooled by a disguise, thinking that Leah was really Rachel. And had he put on a disguise also to deceive somebody, the goat hair on his hand? Did he deny the rights of the firstborn in his family? Yes, he took away the rights of Esau. Another irony, he had been deceived by Rachel's father. And now he had deceived his own, and before that he had deceived his own father. So here the deceiver was deceived. He had reaped what he had sown. Jacob came as the younger to deceive Isaac and has the elder daughter of Laban given instead of the younger for a wife. So I think what a story of poetic justice. The similarities just all the way down. So I think there's no coincidence to what happened to Jacob. I mean, it's almost humorous how it just follows the same pattern of what had happened to him. But we need to remember it was in God's hands and it was totally controlled by God's sovereignty. Was God trying to be punitive? Was God trying to be mean? Was it big payback time? No. He allowed all of these things to happen to Jacob out of his love for Jacob to grow him up and to mature him. Later we see that Jacob never even mentions the doubling of his service from 7 to 14 years. Because later then he says, well, I really want Rachel. And so Laban says, okay, you finish out a week and then you can have Rachel, but you got to work for another 7 years. So he ends up working 14 years to get the wife he wanted. And later on, we don't show him complaining about this. We don't hear him whining about this. He showed genuine concern for Leah and her feelings later on in the text. So it seems as if these lessons, hard lessons, soften Jacob. So don't we often criticize others and their actions? They seem so cruel and mean-spirited. And I think we have to ask ourselves, gee, can I ever be like that? If Jacob had asked in the middle of all that had gone on, maybe after 7 years, how can I be like Laban? Am I really like Laban? Instead of shaking his fist at Laban and all of his bad luck and how it wasn't fair and it was cruel and he was mistreated, I think a great question to ask, oh my gosh, have I ever been like that? Well, the similarities are huge. So it's the whole take the log out of our own eye. God used these hardships to mature him and probably teach him about his own capacity for deception. So I think that's for all of us. It's just, can I ever be like this? Could I ever do that? Have I ever done it in the past? I think if we catch ourselves midstream in criticizing other people, I think, do I have that capacity? So this feels like a lot of duplicity after 7 years of work. And it is. One commentary says, this is a miniature of our own delusioned experience from Eden onwards. We have all had this wake-up call. No matter what your hopes are for a project, no matter what your hopes are for your marriage, no matter what your hopes are for your kids, for a career, in the morning so often, it's not Rachel, it's Leah. No matter how hard we try, it's still Leah. So my question is, what is your Leah? I think some of us have more Leahs the longer we've lived. But when you wake up, what do you think? This is Leah. Jacob worked for 7 years for Rachel and woke up with Leah. You may have worked really hard for something and feel like you deserve Rachel. So what is it? What is it that you feel disappointed in? Where does your disappointment come from? I think for me, and you can ask yourselves this when you feel so disappointed in different things in life, I think for me, it comes from my sense of entitlement. I have a sense of entitlement that all of life should work out. I've lived a good life, blah, blah, blah. I'm not saying my life is so bad, but I think there's a sense of entitlement. You've heard the saying that life's disappointments are God's appointments. God uses our disappointments to mature us like Jacob. He uses them to really show us that so often we look to substitutes to satisfy us, and only God can truly meet those needs that we so desperately are thinking are going to satisfy. These things that we want to be Rachel's, and it could be your marriage, it could be your kids, it could be money. I'm sure money is an issue these days. Careers, image, popularity, whatever it is. The things we want to be Rachel's are good things. Usually, but not always the best. And I love this quote, and it seems that this is counterintuitive to Orange County, but I think it's especially true in Orange County. We don't strive for the best. We cheapen our goals in Orange County. We don't strive for the best or for what we really need. We strive for poor substitutes. We may strive for the most expensive or the glitziest or something else, but we are not striving for God's best. We want the things of this world to bring us meaning and fulfillment. There are all sorts of things in this. Just look at any ads or anything. All sorts of things in this world that offer to give us those. But you know what? They never keep their promise. Marriage has been good. Kids are okay. Job is satisfactory. But we're still disappointed. In the morning, it's still Leah. We put our hopes in the wrong things. Okay, why do we all strive harder and harder? For success, for image, what would you fill in this blank? For money, for power, popularity, why so hard? And I have said this line 100 times, and it's not mine, because I just think it's so powerful. Why do we keep going after these things? Why it's never enough? Because we could never have enough of what we don't really need. Why are we not satisfied? Because we can never have enough of what we don't really need. So what are your Leahs? And this is a great question for our small groups. Where do you compare and say, well, others have it better? Better jobs, better clothes, better kids, more talent, better marriages. I mean, I could go through here and tell you everything I've said. Oh, I wish I could do this like her. I wish I could do this like her. Da, 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 da. We compare. And I think that's the problem. It's where we look and compare. Look where we live. We think we want a better house. Oh, my gosh. Hello. We live in the place with the best houses in the world. I think it's where we look that's the problem. We look to others to and we perceive that they have it all better. And we're chronically disappointed because we feel entitled to have all the Rachels that we think everybody else has. So for me, and I know for Leslie that's here, the best thing that happened for us is being in India. And we kept saying, and you're going to see some of the pictures, if it works, being in the slums, we all kept saying to each other, why wasn't I born here? Why do I have running water? Why do I have electricity? I don't deserve to have been born in America. I did nothing to have the advantages and opportunities our country allows. And you hear people say in our country, well, yeah, but we work hard for what we have. Yeah, those people work harder than I've ever worked a day in my life. They don't have the opportunity to get out of the poverty. And every time I go, I think, Lord, why am I not waking up in a slum this morning? And I know we went one night or one afternoon to the slums, and the next morning my daughter and I woke up and she said, those moms are waking up there. She goes, that wasn't a photo shoot. That wasn't a movie set. She goes, those moms are waking up with their children in those gross, gross slums. And I thought, why are we not waking up in the slums? So you know what? It's not a matter of guilt. There's nothing worse if somebody complaining, like, you should go see the slums of India. It's not a matter of guilt. It's not a guilt trip. It's a gratitude trip. I come back so much more thankful and a little tiny bit less entitled. So talk about Leahs. Think how disappointed people are in other cultures, not just India, but in other cultures. They're just struggling to get food. Their Rachel is that they can feed their babies. So anyway, for me, these trips chip away at my entitlement, which makes me less vulnerable to disappointments. So it's my entitlement and my thinking I deserve so much that adds to my disappointments. So hopefully, too, we realize that even Rachel can't meet our greatest needs. Our expectation, if, gosh, that husband was just perfect, if this job was perfect, if I had the perfect friends, the perfect house, if you thought all those things would become Rachel, it wouldn't satisfy. When we get what we want, there's still something missing. It's because we were not created to be satisfied by the things of this world. We were created for something else. So God uses the Leahs in the morning to show how futile our idols are. He lets us experience the disappointments to show us only Jesus can meet our deepest needs for relationship, fulfillment, for being loved, and on and on and on. He wants to save us from thinking anything else can take his place. He uses the layers, the disappointments, to move our focus from anything or anyone that we think will save us other than God. We need to shift our expectations to that which will never disappoint. And some of us, it takes us longer. It's taken me a long time. I'm still working on it. I love Psalm 62:5. My soul waits silently for God. Alone, my expectation is from him. Would that be great if we got to the place where our expectation was totally from him and everything else kind of minimized? So my challenge for you this morning is, in your groups, talk about your layers with each other. Be really honest. I think the more honest we are, it allows each other to be more honest. What did you at one time would think would be a Rachel? When you got married, did you think your husband would be a Rachel? Your kids, your life, all the things, finances at this point. What did you think? How is it different than you imagined? And yet with all your hard work, it's still Leah. So some of our expectations are not really that important. And we need to get some perspective, and maybe we can give perspective to each other. Some things are not, you know, you can say, well, I would try to give up on that one so much. But this is not to discount those real, true, valid hurts in life. I'm not discounting those. It's some disappointments are crushing, are heartbreaking. But I think the answer is still the same. We need to draw near to God for his comfort during those times too. So I think this is how we can help each other so much. My friends will go, you know, get over that. That's not a big deal. That is the greatest gift if somebody can tell me that. And then somebody else can come alongside. No, this feels like a valid disappointment, you know. But the answer for all of those is God. So be that for each other in the groups. So look more to where you won't be disappointed, because the only real and true Rachel is God himself. Okay, let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your word, and just thank you that we can identify with all the dysfunction in these chapters. And yet, Father, these people are acting out and deceiving each other and lying. And Father, we just see how you are the true God, and you are constant through all these stories. And you continue to love us and come alongside us. And Father, my prayer is just that for me and for all of us, we will learn to depend more on you, and that the things of this world will grow strangely dim. And Father, I just pray for perspective, and I just pray for just grasping onto what will never disappoint. Thank you for these women, and just thank you for their love for you. And I just pray for just a rich time of fellowship in our small groups. We love you, Lord. In your son's name, amen. Okay, now,